the Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology presents a lecture by His Grace Swami Krishnapad, given at the GBC Conference, Dallas, Texas, on May the 24th, 1994, entitled Building and Keeping the Devotee Family.
To give the presentation that we changed from yesterday, I'll give it now, and I'm going to set a time myself, so after I finish that, then for the questions and answers period, then you can ask me some questions, and Radhanath directly, or the both of us, as we compare, discuss some of the points about preaching, making devotees, maintaining devotees, new techniques in devotee making in the Western world as well as in India. I want to preface with about two points. First thing is that many things that we'll be discussing are some keys, some things to get an idea from, and some things you can directly use. But in every preaching strategy, there will be some differences according to the environment that you're in, according to what things you're more comfortable with, and of course according to how much you are able to learn as you are growing from the experience. So in no way think that the things that I'll be mentioning, either the theory or the keys as well as some of the experiences, are something that you should take in the sense of trying to follow it to the key of how it's done. So I think that will help. And some things may seem out of your means, out of your perception, out of what may be functional in your environment. But the idea is to get some challenges that will hopefully help you in being able to make more devotees and maintain more. I was just before coming here, I was down in the temple room. This is the first temple that I've lived in myself, first temple I ever lived in. First temple I visited was New York, and in 1972, I lived here, so I thought it was something very special for me. I've only been back here once since then, and I guess that was maybe 17 years ago. So I was thinking how Radha Kalachandri has so much helped me to try to be some type of devotee, and that is somehow, through this presentation, we can help some of you, or encourage some of you, ways how to make a few more devotees, some souls that are now somewhat lost, some souls will say are waiting to be reclaimed, or if it can help you to be able to protect and safeguard a Gurukula child from losing total faith in the movement, or if it can save you or some of us from perhaps having some complications in the future, in these most critical times, then of course that happens, even on a very, very small scale, and it's very wonderful. Last point before we jump right into it is that of all the things we talk about, the most important formula in devotee making and devotee maintaining is compassion. When someone is drowning, you may not be so skilled. Someone is about to fall off a cliff, you may not be so skilled. But if you have some compassion, there's a very good chance that you're going to find a way how to warn, if not to directly help that person. Particularly, since we are literally in an emergency mission, because anyone can leave their body at any time, as we're going to discuss in one of our categories, that human civilization, as we know it as today, is now coming to somewhat of a close. And so we're at a time when it's very important for us to try to send out the call. Devotees are everywhere, and they're waiting to hear the call. we'll jump right from there into our first proposition that we discussed earlier. And these first seven tenets are key. We would consider that you may want to write those down. Then we're going to pass out a handout with other things that are written down for you. I want you to write these down for you to write them in your own words so they'll have some meaning for you. Now, the first key is reminding ourselves that everyone is a devotee. Everyone in their original nature is pure, which is the spirit soul. At a different degree, we are in a dormant state. Those who are impious are in a more dormant state. And it'll just take longer to wake up. But those who are pious, it is up to us to find ways how to remove any barriers that is causing them not to associate with us. So our preaching strategy is not that we have to create something that is an imposition on people, but we're trying to help them to see what is natural, the things that they have forgotten. So in that case, it should not be intimidating to us to be ready to go anywhere, everywhere to reclaim souls. That's number one. That everyone is actually a devotee. The process is removal of the barrier. Two, somewhat similar. We are involved in a spiritual business of reclaiming souls and preparing souls. Reclaiming in the sense of, for lack of better words, we normally say make devotees, reclaiming those, but also we are preparing people so that at a later time they can become fully involved in devotional service. That means it is just as much as important to bring someone directly into Krishna consciousness as to healthily prepare them so that later you can bring them, or later someone else can. That in one sense is what the Varnashram Dharma, that in one sense is the process of bringing somebody from the mode of ignorance, to passion, to goodness, to the transcendental state. If we look at the life of Prabhupada, we look at the life of the great acharyas, we look at the life of the Goswamis, we see that even though they were the highest quality devotees, that the Goswamis were preaching to the noble class and the ruffians also. We see that Srila Prabhupada, in just and walking or being on the airplane, speaking to people, but always giving his love in such a way that even if the person was not directly preached to, the person was preached to by the example of that particular personality. And therefore, whether we go to the store or whether we're preaching to a congregation of 1,000 or 200 people or whatever, we're in that same mood of preparing and making the connection and being excited by it, even though the person didn't come into the temple to join and shave their hair, or even though they didn't come for darshan. But we have set the stage so that that particular person, the next devotee he or she meets, or the next input that they get from a book or whatever, reminding ourselves that devotional service is such a rare thing, it is based on sukriti or jnana sukriti. And so we are helping people to acquire their credit, so that at some point they'll have sufficient credit when they can walk in. Because if we have come, we have come from some previous connections in past lifetimes, and of course, Srila Prabhupada has given us the great spiritual masters. They have given us far beyond the actual value of our work, but some credits are there. It's as if we have to come up to a certain level. The mercy is there. It's waiting for us to pursue God consciousness. But at a certain amount of credit, it will give us a certain level of contact, of help, of assistance, which also gives a certain level of realization. So we want to see ourselves as making, as reclaiming the devotees and preparing the atmosphere so that others can become. Point number three. And one way of looking at the idea of Varna Ashram is considering that we want to try to make everyone a first-class Vaishnava Brahmin. And those who cannot fit there exactly, then we want to employ them, engage them, based on where they align themselves from that particular platform. So we want to always try to give everyone the maximum of what we have available in terms of trying to get them to become Christian conscious. Where they cannot accept that fully, then that becomes our duty to see how to engage them and connect them in such a way that they can feel a part of the transcendental system and will feel loving pressure to gradually come to the point of trying to do better. We don't want them to feel complacent because we have met them at a certain level. We want them to know we care about them, we love them, they are part. Krishna is their most lovable object, the best friend, worship, etc., etc. We want them to understand that, how to fall back in love with Krishna. And therefore, we have an example by ourselves to be the example. The nucleus should be there by our core devotees, and we try to bring them at that level, but where they don't quite connect, then that's where we see how to engage them. Then we get the whole pyramid of the arrangement of congregational supporters, helpers, etc., as well as devotees of different qualities. Point number four. We are, and these are all keys, basic keys. All the other things we're going to give you on the sheet, they'll go into one or several of these categories. We are not a religion. We are not a religion competing with other religions. Sometimes our devotees get intimidated because people say we're bringing in another religion, or how we're going to contend with the Christians, the Muslims, this or that. We are not a religion. Some of you may remember this quote. I don't have it exactly. But Prabhupada explains that we are a cultural movement to re-spiritualize society. And we are not only a relative cultural movement, but we are the actual culture of humanity. Culture and involves in terms of lifestyle, aspirations. We are the original culture of existence. And so what we are involved in is not in terms of compete, but we're trying to connect people with the universal understanding, knowledge, and principles about life itself. Humankind's relationship to God, to Krishna, to the cosmos. We understand that, and we'll understand what I'll bring up later when I talk about interfaith and new age at this time. This says when we are preaching, we approach the idea of new age teaching. We want to approach people in the spirit of not so much or other religions even. Let's look at that point. We want to approach them not in the spirit of our religion, their religion. We have the inner teaching to all religious systems. As someone goes deeper into Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, the most inner teachings of that system is Krishna consciousness. We have the inner teaching in the most accessible way. And therefore, we can go into churches, we can go into mosques, we can go into other places if they allow us, and we should be able to help them to understand by following the teachings of Krishna consciousness, they can become more aware, more involved in the deeper aspects of their own system, which deals with the basic principles of Krishna consciousness. Because no system has the degree of knowledge about the personality of Godhead. Every bona fide system emphasizes love God with all your heart, emphasizes that we are not of this world. And no system to the degree of ours explains we are not of this world, but who are we? And what connections or what the residence is our residence? Nor the system describes to the degree about the personal God. And practically every system in its mystical traditions talks about a personal aspect of God. So that means, to some degree, it may mean some homework for some of us to find out more about some other systems to see how we can be able to connect people with the inner teachings of those particular systems. We can elaborate on some of those things. As we go over these keys, you can write some notes, we can try to address that. This presentation could take a week. We're going to do it in half an hour or so. So forgive us for moving through some things pretty fast. But I mentioned about technique. Just as, for instance, in Bombay, Radhanath Maharaj's system, one of the simple but powerful things is before each program, he plays the harmonium and does very powerful bhajan. Now that bhajan it's like an archipelago. It's like a call for people coming, assembling, and getting the consciousness of absorbing themselves in his meditation on Prabhupada and his love for them and their love for him reciprocally. Now, someone like myself, if I was having a program and had a harmonium and started playing, instead of people coming, everyone would leave. So he has a harmonium, and then the class, and then kirtan, and all of that takes literally several hours. So certain techniques may be more applicable for you by what you have to offer, and certain things someone else. But the general idea of the keys are very essential, and that's why we're trying to give those first. I hit number what? Number four? Schedule or five? Okay. Now, so remember, Prabhupada mentions that our movement, we are engaged in Sanatana Dharma. So it's not really religion at all. It's beyond that. Religions are vehicles to ride in to come to the platform of recognizing that there is a God. In other words, Bhagavad Gita starts on the platform of Arjuna speaking to Krishna. We're not involved in the system of his ethics and morals, or for people to try to come to a point of accepting that there is a God here. Now that there's understanding there's a God here, what is the relationship, what are the activities involved in that understanding? And that is Krishna consciousness. It is not that if Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, if these great personalities, Ramachandra, Madhavacharya, and Bhaskaracharya, if they all happened to come to Dallas today, that there would be fights or arguments. No. They would be in so much loving accord, even though they came at a different time, taught different things, because even sometimes a teacher may be of a certain commission, of a certain endowment, but his commission may be to give a certain lesson. Someone may have the qualities of, in fact, those qualities of a college professor who has been given a service to teach elementary school. Jesus spoke very clearly, I have much to tell you, but you're not ready to hear it. So it's very clear that there was more that he was connected with. And he said that to his own disciples. So there's so much more to many, many systems, even from what the Prophet himself gave. The Prophet Muhammad, his basic teachings were ethical, moral. His teachings were how to be fair in trade, how to do many ethical things. But in his greatest experience, his own personal experience, his ascension, he had a personal face-to-face connection with God. And therefore, it shows that there was something beyond the general teachings and impersonal teachings of the Quran. He met Allah face to face. He ascended from the lower planet to the medium to the higher, and then Angel Gabriel could not go on his father with him when he got to the highest heavenly kingdom, and then he went above that, which is called Sidratil, where he met Allah face to face. So every system, as we go deeper and deeper in it, we'll find there is some aspect of a personal Godhead. It says that Sarah had a relationship in the Bible with God, like a mother to a child. And there are many, many references, but anyway, that's on we get to interfaith connection. But the point is that Krishna consciousness gives the highest knowledge about the understanding of the Godhead, and that is non-sectarian. If we're thinking that it's sectarian, we're going to approach things that way, we're going to feel intimidated, and we won't let the message come through and see sufficiently. Number five. Preachers, we should not rely only on our own devotees, our own finances. Now what does that mean? It means that if we recognize that everybody is a devotee, we surely don't rely only on the immediate souls around us. First, there is so much more to do. Is it CIA or FBI? Or maybe it's the fundamentalist. Christians should not rely on our own devotees, just as the Christians should not rely on our own facility, our own intelligence. If we're seriously preaching, then we see as Sanatana Goswami was saying that things are coming through me, things are happening. the things should be happening, the miracles should be happening. Because Krishna wants these things to happen. He wants us back more than we want to come back. So many souls are there, Lord Chaitanya is in anxiety, trying to reclaim the souls. And so if some few are making themselves available, will not the power come through if we sufficiently allow ourselves to be available? Therefore, we want to remember that our Father owns everything. Just as if you go somewhere and, you know, your Father, he owns the shopping mall, you walk around very proud because you realize that if your Father is in charge of that mall and you have certain privileges, certain situations, you are secure. So Krishna owns, controls everything. And therefore, we do not have to be so shy about trying to bring back certain parts and parcels of Krishna, different energies, back to Krishna as they are owned by Krishna anyway. So therefore, we must be ready to use all kinds of things. Now, we'll give you some short practical examples. We move to two other points of key, then we'll pass out a handout to you. I'll give you some of our own examples. For instance, we'll take Africa first. We do what's called interesting type of interfaith. There are different ways to approach interfaith activities. We do it in terms of espionage. Can you take me question? It's on video also. Let me give a most basic example. We have one temple in what the UN statistics declared last year as the poorest country in the world, the least developed country, and that's in Sierra Leone. It's a country in West Africa. People live to be about, the oldest lifespan is about 40, 41 years, and some of the terrible place. Have very, very little temple. President's there, he has maybe four or five devotees. And even though he has probably nothing, he is just finished building a temple. He is like major leader in the interfaith conference or the interfaith group in the country. And so what he does, anytime he has a need for something, he manages to call the interfaith board and gets the board. Now here you have the head bishop, the head rabbi, the head imam. And so they are, you know, nationals, they're elderly people, they're responsible in the community. And so when there's a need, then he gets them together, and because he's understanding, and we're praying our presence up in this way, he's understanding that he is not there to shake hands, he's not there really to learn anything from terms of their philosophy. Many things can be learned about their social and economic and political structure. And so therefore, he's looking at every opportunity to see how to take advantage of the situation. When I came this last time into the country, he arranged for all of the leaders of all of the denominations to greet me at the airport, have a press conference, put it on television for one half an hour as I address the leaders and discuss about the problems of the country and all the leaders giving their approval. Now, here he has no money, he has probably no men, but he's not going to rely on the few, you know, three or four devotees that he has. Now, one of the problems that we're having is in America and some parts of the world also, is that in many cases, the things are not going to happen into your temple until you do it. Because in many cases, we do not have other people who are going to do what you want to see happen. It takes a certain type of devotee to make a certain type of devotee. It takes a certain type of nucleus to draw situations to it. Our example in Washington. When I first came to Washington 3 years ago trying to set up, we were having so many successes in Africa. Meetings with presidents, five or six different presidents, our own temple presidents on television regular, radio regular, writing columns in the papers. And a very interesting situation in several programs. But what I saw in America is that there's such a feel, but somehow we have to break down the barrier. So myself and one housewife couple, husband and wife, we're just in one efficiency. So you can't bring anybody to an efficiency. You tell them this is the most wonderful philosophy. It's the highest knowledge. And there you're living in a basement with no windows. So what do? So we started off by first using the facility outside. No money, no men, nothing. So we created a situation of just finding secular topics to talk about that people are interested in. Advertising those particular topics. I'm just guessing on before I look at the next two. Secular topics that people are very concerned with as a way to just try to get somebody to come around it. Some of these topics are, you see, now in tape, which we sell at health food shops, other organizations, and we can get results. And you'll see anything, stress management, time management, male-female relationships, vegetarianism, just so many different things. So from that, we would gather people coming. So it came to a point that we had hundreds. Now, while we were doing that, we'd also have one of our devotees to contact local radio stations. And we would have some program on the radio station, usually trying to time it the day before we would have our program in town. So after we speak, we announce, we speak and do try to speak on something controversial, disturb something on the radio show, and tell people we're going to discuss this more tomorrow at such and such a place. So we use the radio to advertise for us, to bring people. We use the facility that's free, some town hall or university auditorium or something, and then the people come. Then from that, we can discuss later how several things happen. But the end result of that is that year, we got an award in the city for one of the most productive males in Washington. Because what happened is that led itself to many, many people, many, many contacts where we use more than our own facility. There are many New Age groups, there are many, let's just say New Age groups, or spiritual groups, who would like, I'm trying to see how to explain it. They like our philosophy, but they don't like us. I don't know any clear way to say it. They don't really like us in terms of what they understand that we are or some of the experiences. So, there are certain groups, when they have a press conference or press release, they call us, we give them some points. We take no credit for it, and they're happy, we're happy. This is we can make input. There are a few groups that we go, myself or a few other devotees, to their board. We address their board about how to make the transcendental connection with their organization. Then that filters down. Many things can be done in a way of trying to see how to use people to be able to then get them to preach for you. If we're considering everyone is a devotee, and some people do not know it, or we want to reclaim them by planting a seed so they can become devotees at a later time. You can say if I finish just the key, maybe you can open up the BT after that. The other point is something we did in Ghana, which is very classical. In Ghana, I think it was our 12th anniversary that we were, when we come to Ghana. And so our president, Ghana's also a rather poor country, he arranged a national interfaith conference, invited all the major leaders of each faith. We were still kind of almost unknown. But the idea was to use the popularity of others to air our case. So it went on for 1 week. So the whole nation became aware that the Hare Krishnas are having an interfaith conference honoring their anniversary. And all of these 40 people were showing up. Now, because 40 people came, then their members came, and then the press came, and then the TV aired, the interfaith conference. Now the question, the real challenge is here. What's going to happen? So what we did, we had a topic for each day. And we'd have maybe four or five people to speak that day. Somebody from Rosicrucians, somebody from the Catholic bishop, the imam. We'd set it up for maybe four or five people each day, and then a devotee. In most cases, myself. We read their papers. All right? This is not cheating. It's just, it's just spiritual espionage. We gave them a topic. We read everybody's paper, knew what everyone was going to say, all right? So that every session, the devotee would touch upon their points and show that there was more. But to do it in such a way that nobody felt they were being upstaged or that they were just being brought there to be proselytized to. Thanking, giving respect to the nice points that were made, but each time showing something additional. By the time the week was over, because the Ekinkar people had brought their people, the Theosophy people, the Grail people, the Baha'is, the Buddhists, this, that, that. There are people hearing each time. Now in an arena where they are not bringing opposition, or they're not bringing fences. By the time it was over, how much respect so many people in the country would develop because of seeing the devotees being able to maintain their ground in such a situation. Now, most of the leaders are favorable. We're able to use them to help us get land, different types of facilities, because we brought them in. They no longer think of us as we say in Africa, small boys. They no longer think of us in terms of being some kind of cult society, and their people buy our books. And at the same time, there's not a real threat because we weren't there to convert. But obviously, some people will then come and become directly involved as well as supporters. So just too much to elaborate on that point. But the idea is using other people's facilities, other people's popularity, their audience, their manpower, their money, etc. When I move around Africa, most times we ask for devotees to get engagement every place. They know, get two basic types of engagement, mainly television. Nigeria had a TV show for about 5 years in one of the states. In the other places, every state I go to, I do television. In Washington, I told you also, we're on television now. Washington, D.C. cable, Maryland cable, Virginia cable. And here we are in America, and Washington is a very international, cosmopolitan place. So the people who are now hearing that are people from all over the world. Now, what they understand, that they can work their heads off in trying to get 100 people to come to some auditorium. But if we can do a television program, we can reach thousands. Or if they can arrange to get me a program in the Baha'i temple where they have already 900 people coming, then how much more exposure that is. So sometimes we can try to emphasize more other people's audiences and trying to plug in those particular areas. That's just the key about not only relying on our material facility. And the spiritual facility is the idea of trying to open up for divine intervention, never thinking that we alone are sufficient based on our spiritual energy or insight. So I think that was five, huh? Now, 6 and 7, then we stop the keys. Number 6 is a proper balance with the material and the spiritual concerns. Practically every spiritual society has been affected by that, especially at our age. But now we have children who are teenagers or young adults practically. How to be able to go on with your spiritual life and to cover your material situation so that you don't have to worry about it. We want to make money so that we don't have to worry about financial things. Not like the materialists, that we just want to pile it up. We don't want to have to worry about those things, so we need money. How that happens, in many cases, determines the potency and the longevity of your particular arrangement. Because we see in our own cases that there are several devotees who could be stronger if their financial situation was better. They would be able to spend more time with their sadhana in association. They would be able to spend more time in more direct preaching. And because they're running after money, they find themselves getting farther and farther outside of the devotional circle. The very last key When someone joins or comes to join, they will psychologically be looking to see themselves. They'll psychologically be looking to see if they join, what is it going to be like. Now, we're in a world where people are very class conscious, race conscious, body conscious on all levels. Almost everybody does this except us. Most people who are heavy into recruiting know that you have to use some strategy in recruiting. If somebody comes into your temple and they have spent, you know, 10 years in Israel, and you have a devotee who's born in Israel, who's been to Israel, it's just practical to call that devotee and make sure that devotee gets a chance. Or it's practical that devotees in the temple should know each other enough to know who may be more likely to do this than someone else. And these are just little things, but can make a very big difference. We train our devotees in Washington that every engagement is a spiritual warfare, a spiritual battle. We want to get the maximum leverage from that. And when people come in, as soon as somebody knocks in that, rings that bell, comes in that door, the lights go on in everyone's mind. But after a few minutes, it summed up something about that person, and then we try to see how to make the approach from there. Or when we have an engagement, something similar. Every engagement I do is totally different in terms of who I bring, what I say, or what I lead off with. Just like before I left, I had an engagement with a very, lack of a better word, upper middle class business community. They have a psychological organization that's mainly designed for people who are in conflict or in stress. And there's a tremendous number of people in Washington who are under stress due to just divorce or some political complication or whatever. There are more psychiatrists in one building in Washington than most countries have in the entire country. So this was very high-level professional. So for that engagement, we brought three or four special devotees designed to infiltrate the environment. We have Namahata. Namahata program in Detroit, in Pittsburgh, in Jerusalem, in North Carolina, where there are communities that we tune into, getting them to preach for us. We first work with the leader. Now, how do we meet the leader? From some of the videos, from some of the television programs, from some of the radio programs, from some of the tapes. When we make the contact with the leader, or some of the devotees, sometimes we've met some of the persons, we let them know this is a very delicate thing that we're doing. You are in the Christian church, especially now we're working with the Methodists, a group of Methodist teachers, one of them. And one or two cases, you know, with Muslims. It's a very kind of dangerous thing for a high-level Muslim to convert. And the Christian situation, the Christian ministers have one of the most political boards you can ever come in contact with. And they can put pressure, they can expel someone. So we explain to them, it is important that as you learn this knowledge, that you speak it to your people in the language that they can understand. It's important that you gather around you a few of your most dearest associates in the church and you have a Krishna-conscious study group with them so that they are able to understand what you're doing. They can reinforce you because at some time, the person will definitely have difficulty. Then, at some point, after getting Prabhupada's book, tapes, and these tapes we just passed around, we do special tapes, grid tapes. Now, at some point, we go to visit them. I'll take anywhere from 15 to 25 devotees with me. We go in the spirit that we're on a mission. We cook for Sodom. We'll be with them maybe 3 or 4 days, usually a whole weekend. We'll go to that church. We'll live with them. They already understand. We're vegetarians. What we do, we chant. We rise early. We get them to participate with us. And each devotee who is approaching someone keeps that person in their mind. They call them later. They set up, establish a relationship. I go on the Sunday or Saturday to the church and go right into the pulpit and speak Krishna consciousness right in the pulpit. Other things that's a little controversial, but this is my service to Prabhupada, my greatest way of pleasing Prabhupada on the planet, is that I was involved in espionage. And so, in the sense of creating situations and trying to sell the book. So, different programs I dress differently. I dress, Vaishnava dress in some programs, Indian dress in some programs, Western dress in some programs, African dress in other programs. Now, for me, it doesn't matter to me at all. I'll go in a bathing suit if I can help somebody. If I can get somebody to chant Hare Krishna. But as we mentioned when we first started, some of these things are just examples or some keys, but will not work in certain areas or should not be considered, but we're just trying to put some appliedness into what we're talking about. Our institute that we started in Washington itself is actually called the Institute of Applied Spiritual Technology, which is mainly geared toward how we can take Krishna consciousness and make it applicable in any situation for ourselves as well as for others without becoming unchaste, without minimizing the actual essence, and how to do it in a joyful and exciting way, in a pioneering way. And any of you who visit our institute will see that our devotees are very festive. We have overabundance of Brahmins, and our devotees are all involved in various projects. Because this is what Radhanath was saying in terms of empowerment, that when the devotees are empowered, they are happy, they do more, and they come up with all kinds of ideas and ways themselves as they study the book, how to make devotees. So we have to first, in some cases, to start it off, we have to use ourselves. When I started this thing off by going out and doing those programs at the school, we would sign, now it's only just three or four of us, we would have a sign-up list after the lecture for anybody who wanted to meet this woman. I would meet for 6 months. I took off from Africa and other places, 6 months, set in Washington, and I would see people for an hour, practically 7-8 hours a day. And that was a drain. But the idea was somehow to make contact, the devotees are there, and that if we give people some loving kindness, some consideration, then even those who are far from really being devotees, just by the kindness, will gradually get drawn in, and then we can make them more and more devotees. The majority of people I have with me now have been involved in different spiritual metaphysical systems for 10, 12, and sometimes 15 years. I've been with Guru Mai, Swami Sisamoy, Swami Satyananda. They've been involved in some of those systems, and they have felt some lack in some cases due to some of the points that we are mentioning that we need to be able to address. But then they come in, not only material expertise, but certain involvement in other systems that now when Krishna is there, they become powerful creatures. What Peter did here the other day, we have devotees who have just become devotees in 2 years, not as good as Peter, but who do the same thing. We have devotees who go out and they teach courses or seminars on death and dying. We have devotees who go out and they approach. We have one devotee who even meets people in the capital. Just recently he was talking to some senators and one lady who's very dear to the president, giving workshops on stress management and dealing with small groups of people, three or four, who now have taken Krishna. They already had some involvement in other secular things. Now they're taking Krishna, and then it can be put back to be able to use that for Krishna. But seven is when someone joins, they must see themselves. So, therefore, the strategy is when you go for programs, be careful about where you're going, who you're bringing with you, people coming to the temple, to deal with them in a way that they will feel comfortable, that if they join, that they'll feel all right, they'll be like you, be like this person, like that person. And because people are so body conscious, if they see somebody, and I've people are so body conscious, if they see somebody, in Africa we say, it's like in Africa we have so many different tribes. So anything I have to do, I find out what tribe that person's from, and I'll send one of my men or women from that tribe to go and make a contact. Even though we may think that it's good to get people out of body conscious, which is there, but sometimes we have to use that to get people from that community connection. You know, pick a thorn out, whip a thorn. Someone is coming from the Indian community. Someone is in your temple from that same part of India. How much immediately there's a warmth that's established by having that person to preach along with others, but at least that person to be the main one, you know, to set up the concept. So those seven things, keys, okay? So if I rush through the others, at least we have those particular things. Now we go to your sheet. First one is developing, in this category, developing a greater appreciation for the necessity of community. We mentioned about looking at what community means in terms of spiritual world. This is where we're trying to go. So as we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we read the biographies of the great saints, we want to see how they act, how they interact amongst each other. What do they think about? What do they do? And in this way, begin to imbibe some of that spiritual psychological makeup. B, we mentioned that briefly, about studying devotional Indian families. We see better ways of how we can go on as healthy devotees but take nice care of our children, nice proper care of our wives, husbands, etc. Now this one is a little interesting. Number C. Practically every alternative or new age group is dwelling on this except us. Now, we don't really have to do it so seriously because we are a movement that's supposed to be ready to preach under any circumstance. Srila Prabhupada did not emphasize much about the fact that this civilization is going to fall, but he did. He said in several places that this material civilization will come to a close. And he said in the near future. Well, now what is happening is that practically the majority of the New Age groups are having that as a major part of their philosophy. That coming the turn of this century, year 2000, that there will be major changes. Now, to some of your surprise, some of the top financial consultants in the world are telling their clients that civilization is coming to an end, that the federal government will no longer, pretty soon, be able to maintain its ability of having a federation, that states will break off, that crime will become so rampant, that law and order will practically there will be no real sense of law and order. And they're telling them, even though this is going to happen, we want to give you information how to make money and become rich based on those situations. There are certain very high-level financial journals you can read, and the top analysts are speaking in this way. So you don't have to be a mystic or a psychic or whatever to discuss this. Just give you some idea. In the teachings of Egyptology, the pyramidology, also saying by the calculations of the pyramid, by year 2000, that civilization will come to an end. Nostradamus, Edgar Cayce. Give you some examples.
I wrote one of them down.
In the Hopi Indian teaching, 2000. See, Revelation. Then we have cases where in Buddhism, general Buddhism, it's explained that Buddhism will survive for 2,500 years. 2,500 years now. In Tibetan Buddhism, it explains that after the dethroning of the dethroning of the 13th Lama, then civilization will come to a close. 13th Lama has been dethroned. We can go from one system to the next to the next, and these are things that the New Age people are discussing, preparing, going, moving off. Now, one interesting phenomenon is that many communities that have moved in special areas, they were founded by leaders who received some connection or some experience from some seemingly divine entities, divine beings. I was once reading a book on alternative music communities and trying to evaluate some of the history. And one of the things that I was able to perceive is that many of the communities that have been established to move in certain areas, and the leaders are telling the people, be vegetarian, no illicit sex, no gambling, some of the basic principles, the leaders themselves get some type of revelation, realization, some kind of mystical experience in such a way to move off into such situations. So we know from our philosophy, just as well as Christians and the Muslims know that there's angels and there's archangels and there's demigods and there's so many different situations of entities that are existing. We also know that these higher beings do have different abilities to have influence in different ways. Now, these personalities are mainly geared toward just the heavenly kingdoms or heaven on earth. But there's a tremendous transition going on, and people are aligning themselves. So we're bringing this up, just stressing about this category of some of the important reasons for community, devotees being together, devotees getting their spiritual life more intact, and devotees realizing the emergency-ness of the particular times, and just addressing what other people are considering and thinking about as we may have to preach to them and approach them. D. Devotees have left material family, culture, and support system. All must be firmly replaced. We consider how much sometimes the devotee has had to give up, and then to remain in society for 15, 20 years, and how embarrassing it is then to have to go back, you know, to the mother and father, or go back to the old neighborhood, and you have nothing. And they look at you as a complete failure, a material failure, a spiritual failure, and you see yourself like that also. The unfortunate thing is that we want to minimize, one, souls who've been trained up for years and years and years, with so much of Prabhupada's love and care and Prabhupada's actual blood, and then for those souls to go off wandering in such a way. It's very heavy. So when people have given up so much, then it's necessary for us to be able to not only substitute, but to provide them even better, even a more real family situation. And so if there's not sufficient love, there's not sufficient caring when they have given up their mothers, their fathers, their friends, and so many things. Otherwise, we'll have, I'll give you one little small example. I was thinking about the other day when I saw Mahabodhi. We had one devotee who was with us in our party many years ago, and he was seemingly a rather strong devotee, but he had this sentiment toward his family. So one day, the mother sent a card saying how, you know, last week was your birthday, and everybody came over, everyone was there except you, and I made, you know, your special cake. I thought I would just send you a piece of it, and she packed it and sent it in the mail. The devotee saw that letter, bit into the cake, and blew. Because the main thing is that at that time he was having some problems, you know, in his interpersonal relationship with devotees. And so here, Maya is stimulating the whole idea of the material family connection, and then he leaves the royal path of devotion. So Maya wants to find many ways. If we don't have ways to kind of substitute that, then we'll lose, of course, more and more to see devotees. Now this one, let's move real quick to number two. Western or materialistic worldview versus Vedic or spiritual. Now you turn to your second page. We have a whole page on this. In your own time, you can look at that. The major idea is that we are much more materialistic, much more Western, much more egocentric than we normally think about. And this is affecting the way we relate to each other, devotees, where we relate to leaders, the way that we relate to our children. It affects the way that we are even perceiving, you know, reality itself. So we have just some alignment here. Our community, the idea of so much of the mentality is, I am successful by your destruction or your demise. So there's a heavy competition that we have even as devotees due to our heritage or our material background. And so it becomes harder to see that one success, your success and my success, is both possible. Number two, a community supports and provides material security, but it does not interfere with one's individualism. In a materialistic scheme, people will be in communities mainly to be able to get something, but they do not want to give up their individuality. But we, in a spiritual situation, a community is where I contribute to the support of the whole, and I see myself as a total part of the same. We're ready to make a sacrifice. We're ready to try to be as selfless as possible. Three are somewhat similar. Community is a place to hide from responsibility. That's the materialistic way. And to do what? Shift the blame on somebody else. Or the spiritual, a place to take responsibility and be a part of the solution. Even the devotee should normally think when there's a problem, he or she should think that they're at fault. It says when somebody leaves our society, we should feel how unfortunate I am that I didn't show or radiate enough love to help that person to feel more secure about staying. How unfortunate it is that I didn't notice fast enough that the person was in Maya to be able to try to help that particular person. That even if we are seemingly not responsible at all, we should feel that way so we'll be more attentive to helping and to being able, of course, to minimize difficulties if we are fully responsible. Number four, community leadership and institutions seek power and impersonalism as an equalizing factor among community members. For the spiritual side, community leaders and institutions seek exemplary, pure, benevolent, personal guidance from its members. And the others, materialistic conception, love means sex. Where in the spiritual, love means purity and power. Humility in a materialistic situation is weakness. Somebody's humbled in the material scheme, it means that they are simply a coward or that they're weak. Where for us, humility is strength. Like the wonderful class that Maharaj gave today, emphasizing humility. Leadership, material sense, domination. Now, these are many patterns that we are subjected to just by taking birth in this part of the world, or many things that are there just due to material consciousness. So we're trying to identify them. Why? If you have a sickness, a disease, but if you have, for instance, pneumonia, but you think you have a cold, then you will not treat it with the proper medicine, proper prescription to deal with that. So if we have a better view of how deep it is, then we can go in and be able to address it and be more in the Vaishnava loving, selfless mood in our association. Six, children raised by father and mother only, and sometimes only one parent. Now, children raised by extended families. These six and seven go together. Marriage is a contract between husband and wife. Marriage means one is married into a family. One of the most important things in a person's life is bringing children into the world and marrying. But we deal with that in the Western worldview. We allow people to do the most important decisions in their life, usually alone. This is very, very dangerous. One, it means there's more likelihood that they'll also deal with their problems alone, or more likelihood that they will divorce. When there is a sense of community, when there is a sense of spiritual culture, then when people are ready to make such a serious decision, you are not married an individual, but you're married into a family. You're married into a community. And therefore, you are held accountable to the community. And when there is a problem, that same community that helped to encourage you into the relationship is now responsible for helping you to maintain it. When there are two people in a discord, man and woman, and they are going to try to solve it themselves, there is more likelihood that they may not come to an agreement because it's only the two of them. But when they have voluntarily given some of their independence to a community, and they're both ready to honor that community, then, or honor that board, or in the temple, honor the situation. Now, we have some terrible relationships in Washington sometimes with these areas, but they're working out sweet in the sense that we have, when somebody wants to marry, or we have special devotees designed, set up, who they are like the marriage board. And so they make their appeal to the board. And then it's announced in the community for everybody to hold them accountable for the idea that they are trying to bond together to serve better, to serve Guru and Krishna better and the community better. And we all now want to see that they are responsible for what they are entering into and to be able to help them. Now, this kind of monitoring thing is important in other ways. We have women's auxiliary and men's auxiliary. Simply means times when all the men meet on a regular basis, once or twice a month, and times when all the women meet once or twice a month. And they discuss projects, and they discuss issues based on probably perhaps their agenda in relationship to their Krishna consciousness and their project. And it's at that time also where people have to put each other on the wall if somebody is deviating. There is monitoring system, just as Maharaj mentioned, where if somebody does not come around for a week or 2 weeks, then someone is on the phone calling them. So the problem is, I didn't have a babysitter, or my son is sick. Oh, well then we'll find somebody in the community who will take care of your son. So we call our community doctor, or we have someone who's not working during that time. Some way so that everyone feels cared for, and therefore less reason to go outside and to enter into a sense gratification. The last three here, success measured by material commodity versus success measured by renunciation. So you can read those last two. These are just mindsets in terms of materialistic view basis versus a spiritual view. You still have an African proverb here also. It takes a whole village to raise a child. Number three, we're going to skip that because of lateness. Most of that you know yourself. Atmosphere of U.S. and the world in the 1960s. It is different than what we are dealing with now. And several speakers have discussed that. So we cannot always use See, details can be changed. There are things that are details, and there are things that are central principles of the Vaishnava alignment. Details may be changed according to the place and, of course, the time. So some of the things that we are trying to mention are to be considered now due to some of the changes are what we have now in number four. More alternatives for spiritual seekers. When most of us joined, there was not quite as many places to shop around to. Now there are so many organizations that are spiritual or pseudo-spiritual where the regulations are nowhere as strict as ours. And therefore, what will happen is that some people will be drawn to those or will come even within our circles, and then we'll see, well, they are being spiritual, but they're not chanting 16 rounds, and they don't make a big issue about illicit sex, and then certain souls will be distracted from engaging in Krishna consciousness, you see, because of that. Phenomenal. Since I'm thinking, because it's late, the other things are there, and they're all topics of their own, but I'm thinking that maybe we should stop now and just take some questions on some of the things that we've been over. You have the other points there, and you can try to just, you know, do some reflection on them. I think we should stop now, and then we can address some of these things, or particularly the way this is happening in India with Radhanath's project, or I can explain more about our Namahata or things that we're doing here in America. First question.
This is not a challenge, but it's a real query.
Please.
What you presented is very, very appealing. And I'm just wondering, at least I got some impression that initially Srila Prabhupada came, I suppose there's a balance there, but you know, he went and he spoke at a few churches here and there and the other thing. And then we read in the Lilamrita that he didn't so much appreciate that strategy. He wanted to have his own place. And then later on, someone invited him to go to a vegetarian society to speak, and it was something like, you know, we are not interested in speaking on just vegetarianism. How did you know the gist of what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. 2 points. First point, when Srila Prabhupada first came, he also only had a few books. And then by the American devotee coming to the call, then we were able to help to publish the books, to edit them, etc. He gave us the theme of what had to be done. You know, the Lord Caitanya told us that we should preach everywhere, every town and into every village. And every village means literally every village. And that's it. The point is, if we are compassionate, then we want to give Krishna consciousness to everybody. And giving it means that in some cases we have to make bridges. When they come across the bridge, Krishna must be there. Otherwise, we've just, you know, sold ourselves out on the process of preaching. I don't understand.
Use other animals intelligence.
Yeah,
you need first time as an animal.
Uh-huh.
But you can use other animals.
Use other animals money and intelligence?
And intelligence.
Yes. I think that's part of the whole process of the fundraising community. How we can use something for Krishna to give and to back to Krishna. In terms of the idea of the Vedic system of the family, this is also the principle that we're all discussing now, is that we have to create more of the family environment that gives that kind of reinforcement, that gives more sense, you know, success. And our situation shows that most of our marriages have ended in divorce. It has a lot to do with the basic sociological structure of our society itself.
One of the things that is,
Morgan has some of these very, very strange statements that strictly conflict with our philosophy. Initially, when you're approaching them, you're trying to build a relationship. How do you deal with those conflicts?
It's that every tradition has exoteric practitioners and esoteric. The exoteric practitioners of every tradition are those that are more concerned with the form. And they're the ones who are involved in so much of the religious fights. They're the ones who are more sectarian. Those people are not so easy to preach to. But those who are more involved in the actual inner experiences of trying to have more direct relationship with God, those kind of persons can be approached. In every system, you have that.
You avoid the first group.
Yes.
You don't deal with the first group.
Normally, we don't deal with the first group. Like in Islam, there's a Sufi. In Christianity, there's mystic Christianity. In Judaism, there's mystic Judaism. Those sort of connections are usually more acceptable. It's just like we have a community in Israel that we're having contact with. Hundreds and hundreds of people. And they're more into mystic Judaism. So we are being able to give them Krishna consciousness in the sense that it is the deeper or inner teaching to their own system also.
There are a lot of alternative philosophies out there. And one of the issues in Krishna consciousness, and a lot of the leaders in these alternative philosophies, are women. And in Krishna consciousness, women are considered by a lot of outsiders as second-class citizens, and also that we do not have the same rights that the males do in Krishna consciousness. How can we address that? Because everyone I ever talked to said, I don't want to be in here. They treat women like dirt. How do we address that?
It's a very, very serious problem. We talk to many of our mothers, they will tell you it is a very serious problem for them. We have Arti, in some of the temples, the mothers in the back, they do not see the deity the whole time. In some of our temples, when there's preaching going on, and a woman is preaching, sometimes even a young brahmachari will just come in and intervene. The mother has been a preacher for 16, 17 years, and brahmachari comes and intervenes and says something embarrassing into the situation. Now, we have to look at three things, real quick. First thing is, what has become institutionalized based on our own sociological involvement and what has been what Prabhupada has actually given. There is some questioning right now on the board in terms of, for instance, women in the back. I was listening to one of the conferences that devotees were having in Europe, and it was being brought up, and there should be more research on this. It was being discussed that I think in 1975 was mentioned, that more sannyasis had come from India and had come back to America, and that some were saying to Prabhupada that all the women should be sent to Australia, and that the women and that this is you can try to get more information, you see, from this from a Vendor's group. He was there at that conference, and so the point they were making is that Prabhupada was not happy about it, and that after Prabhupada left, then they put the women again in the back, and that somehow this would start happening all over the temple.
This is their theory.
This is their theory, yes. So there's some things that we have to look at closer to see, but we do see certain things that are categorical. Prabhupada did give women second initiation. He did not give them a threat, but he gave them second initiation. He himself allowed the Govinda prayer of Jamuna Chani every morning. He himself gave his mother, Jadarani, special services. So we see that he himself was never chauvinistic. That the scriptures say certain things, and that's theirs. But we have to see there's a difference between how we relate. Just like, for instance, from a political, sociological, cultural perspective, material, most of us would not give each other the time of the day. There are many of you who I wouldn't spend a moment with, and some would spend a moment with me, from a mature point of view. We want to address each other and think of each other more in terms of being soul, and not just the shell of the body. And the Padma Purana explains that one who thinks that the deity is an idol, or one who thinks that a devotee is a caste, that is offensive. But we do this every single day in most of our temples. How we treat the women, how we treat each other. And if we would go around, we'll find that many of our women are very, very depressed. And they have great difficulty when people come into the temple or they go places and they have to explain why we do certain things. Because there are many women who are very sharp these days, and they're feminists. I'm sorry, who are feminists, and they are very disturbed with mature society, like with the homosexual situation. These are great candidates, the feminists, some of these people, because they are very disturbed with certain aspects of material society. And there are some audiences for it. The interfaith or the New Age also. There are people who are more primed if we're able to approach them in the proper way. So I think it's a very serious time for us first to have more women presidents. I think it's important that we come to a point where we employ a person based on their qualifications. In Germany, they have 3 women presidents. I think some of you are not aware of that. Is that right, Mukunda? They have women presidents. My temple, my project in Washington could not run if I didn't have, Mama is there. I have very powerful women. You know, women, you have university professors, women who are doctors. Almost more than half the questions, isn't it? It came from the women. So we are, you know, if we make women think that they cannot really be prime candidates for self-realization, how enthusiastic are they going to be?
Actually, Socrates said that in a religious gathering, there are always more women. He always used to say that.
Who's that?
There's
more
than
half women.
So this is a big topic, Mara.
I'm sorry. We want to take advantage of Rana Swami Maharaj being here, and some of you, we can discuss some of these things at a later time. But maybe for our last 5 or 10 minutes or so, if there's some questions that we may like to address, some of his preaching, his congregational preaching, then we want to take that. So let us take, I think, 5 minutes. Is it me? Do I have 5 minutes more? Do I have 5 minutes? Okay. All right. See, what Sotomayor said is important, is that that's something that you can do, and something that a few of the other men can do. It's not something that every devotee, of course, should try, but we're talking about reaching more people and a higher class of people, and some of those who are in the presence or the leadership position may have to find ways to free themselves to go out and to personally do that. And then once you start bringing people in of that caliber, then they start making other devotees, you know, who are similar. Yes, this pink sheet that's being passed around shows some. And I'll end with this. I'll just read some also. It's exactly an example. These are some of the seminars we have at the Institute. We have a martial arts program. We have about 4 or 5 devotees who are martial arts experts. And so the martial arts situation automatically lends itself to a guru-disciple relationship. So we have our own Krishna Conscious Martial Arts Institute. People come, all these courses they pay, and so once a week they have a philosophy class, which is directly Krishna Conscious. Some of them are becoming a devotee. We have classes in conflict resolution, stress management, all of these things are given then with Krishna Consciousness. Our nutrition, and we have specialists in all these areas who are devotees, so that helps out. We have big programs in male, you know, female relationships, and we sometimes advertise that in town, if you want to have find a spiritual husband or a spiritual mate, people come like anything. And then we have 2 or 3 devotees who then have to monitor the whole thing. They make nice prasadam, serve out, get people talking about their situation, and they always show them, are your problem is due to a lack of Krishna, how Krishna consciousness can help it, and what it means, you know, to have a relationship based on trying to serve God. So, you know, that's always a problem with everyone. We have classes seminars on life and death, karma, renunciation. We have a 6-month what's called a facilitator's course, which is really nothing but a sophisticated boxer course for people who've been with us for a while. They come closer for the inner teaching. There they learn the prayer, they learn our teach, all of these things. We have a hatha yoga class. Some of these are in different buildings. We use, again, other people's facilities also. We have 3 buildings ourselves. A major building is these buildings in Capitol Hill, but then we also use some schools. We use mostly clinics and things. We have a regular counseling service, professional counselors, psychiatrists for devotees, so they're receiving their patients, and then some they send to Bhagavad Gita class, they send them to mantra meditation course, and others they just directly preach to in that sense. And some they just, you know, say a few words to them to get them to be vegetarian, and then they'll send them away. But now they're getting paid while they're preaching to others, and it's forcing them to be more spiritual because on their job, they have to think, you know, about Krishna consciousness as they're trying to give it. There's so many people into therapy in terms of, you know, massage therapy, homeopathic, acupressure, acupuncture, about 4 or 5 people in those areas. This is an area a lot of sort of pious people are getting involved in, so we can bring some in from there. Then we have, vegetarian cooking. I can just stop there. We make clothes. A lot of people are trying to learn how to make clothes. We have astrology. We have devotional music, mantra meditation, you know, numerology, palmistry. In other words, all of those things are there, but it's all understood that this is espionage in the sense that Krishna consciousness, and we're in there, Krishna consciousness is not a religion, but it's a process, a cultural process of re-spiritualizing human civilization. It is a knowledge about the soul, that everyone is a devotee, lost in different ways temporarily, and the arrangement is how to reclaim people. So you reclaim somebody who's mad, you have to go and reach them, and then give them and see the medication. You say the person is mad, you come to their face and tell them they're mad, little will happen. Somebody's insane, he thinks he's Napoleon, and you tell him, you know, you're not Napoleon, and then he just blocks you out. But you go in, you give him a little loving care, and then from that loving care, you can get him to come to sanity. So it all ends with what we started with, compassion and loving care, and then Krishna comes through as we find some way to try to get people to philosophy, to give them what they're looking for now in perverted ways.
the Institute for Applied Spiritual Technology presents a lecture by His Grace Swami Krishnapad, given at the GBC Conference, Dallas, Texas, on May the 24th, 1994, entitled Building and Keeping the Devotee Family.
To give the presentation that we changed from yesterday, I'll give it now, and I'm going to try to time myself so after I finish that, then for the questions and answers period, then you can ask me some questions and Radhanath directly or the both of us as we compare and discuss some of the points about preaching, making devotees, maintaining devotees, new techniques in devotee making in the Western world as well as in India. I want to preface with about two points. First thing is that many things that we'll be discussing are some keys, some things to get an idea from, and some things you can directly use. But in every preaching strategy, there will be some differences according to the environment that you're in, according to what things you're more comfortable with, and of course according to how much you are able to learn as you are growing from the experience. So in no way think that the things that I'll be mentioning, either the theory or the keys as well as some of the experiences, something that you should take in the sense of trying to follow it to the key of how it's done. So I think that will help, and some things may seem out of your means, out of your perception, out of what may be functional in your environment. But the idea is to give some challenges that will hopefully help you in being able to make more devotees and maintain more. I was just before coming here, I was down in the temple room. This is the first temple that I've lived in myself, first temple I ever lived in. First temple I visited was New York, and in 1972, I lived here, so I thought it was something very special for me. I've only been back here once since then. I guess that was maybe 17 years ago. So I was thinking how Radha Kalachandri has so much helped me to try to be some type of devotee, and that if somehow, through this presentation, if we can help some of you, or encourage some of you, ways how to make a few more devotees, some souls that are now somewhat lost, some souls will say are waiting to be reclaimed, or if it can help you to be able to protect and safeguard a Gurukula child from losing total faith in the movement, or if it can save you or some of us from perhaps having some complications in the future in these most critical times, then of course that happens even in a very, very small scale, and it's very wonderful. Last point before we jump right into it is that of all the things we talk about, the most important formula in devotee making and devotee maintaining is compassion. When someone is drowning, you may not be so skilled. Someone is about to fall off a cliff, you may not be so skilled. But if you have some compassion, there's very good chance that you're going to find a way how to warn, if not to directly help that person. Particularly since we are literally in an emergency mission, because anyone can leave their body at any time, as we're going to discuss in one of our categories, that human civilization, as we know it as today, is now coming to somewhat of a close. So we're at a time when it's very important for us to try to send out the call. Devotees are everywhere, and they're waiting to hear the call. We'll jump right from there into our first proposition that we discussed earlier. And these first seven tenets are key. We would consider that you may want to write those down. Then we're going to pass out a handout with other things that are written down for you. I want you to write these down. You can write them in your own words so they'll have some meaning for you. Now, the first key is reminding ourselves that everyone is a devotee. Everyone in their original nature is pure, which is the spirit soul. And to different degrees, we are in a dormant state. Those who are impious are in a more dormant state, and it'll just take longer to wake up. But those who are pious, it is up to us to find ways how to remove any barriers that is causing them not to associate with us. So our preaching strategy is not that we have to create something that is an imposition on people, but we're trying to help them to see what is natural, the things that they have forgotten. So in that case, it should not be intimidating to us to be ready to go anywhere, everywhere to reclaim souls. That's number one. That everyone is actually a devotee. The process is removal of the barrier. Two, somewhat similar, we are involved in a spiritual business of reclaiming souls and preparing souls. Reclaiming in the sense of, for lack of better words, we normally say make devotees, reclaiming those, but also we are preparing people so that at a later time they can become fully involved in devotional service. That means it is just as much as important to bring someone directly into Christian consciousness as to healthily prepare them so that later you can bring them or later someone else can. That in one sense is what the Varnashram Dharma, that in one sense is the process of bringing somebody from the mode of ignorance, the passion, the goodness, to the transcendental state. If we look at the life of Prabhupada, we look at the life of the great acharyas, we look at the life of the Goswamis, we see that even though they were the highest quality devotees, that the Goswamis were preaching to the noble class and the ruffians also. We see that Srila Prabhupada, in just in walking or being on the airplane, speaking to people, but always giving his love in such a way that even if the person was not directly preached to, the person was preached to by the example of that particular personality. And therefore, whether we go to the store or whether we're preaching to a congregation of 1,000 or 200 people or whatever, we're in that same mood of preparing and making the connection and being excited by it, even though the person didn't come into the temple to join and shave their hair, or even though they didn't come for darshan. But we have set the stage so that that particular person, the next devotee he or she meets, or the next input that they get from a book or whatever, reminding ourselves that devotional service is such a rare thing, it is based on sukriti or jnana sukriti. And so we are helping people to acquire their credit so that at some point they'll have sufficient credit when they can walk in. Because if we have come, we have come from some previous connections in past lifetimes, and of course, Srila Prabhupada has given us, the great spiritual masters, they have given us far beyond the actual value of our work, but some credit for there. It's as if we have to come up to a certain level. The mercy is there. It's waiting for us to pursue God consciousness, but at a certain amount of credit, it will give us a certain level of contact, of help, of assistance, which also gives a certain level of realization. So we want to see ourselves as making, as reclaiming the devotee and preparing the atmosphere so that others can become. Point number three. And one way of looking at the idea of Varna Ashram is considering that we want to try to make everyone a first-class Vaishnava Brahmin. And those who cannot fit there exactly, then we want to employ them, engage them, based on where they align themselves from that particular platform. So we want to always try to give everyone the maximum of what we have available in terms of trying to get them to become Krishna conscious. Where they cannot accept that fully, then that becomes our duty to see how to engage them and connect them in such a way that they can feel a part of the transcendental system and will feel loving pressure to gradually come to the point of trying to do better. We don't want them to feel complacent because we have met them at a certain level. We want them to know we care about them, we love them, they are part. Krishna is their most lovable object, the best friend, worship, etc., etc. We want them to understand that, how to fall back in love with Krishna. And therefore, we have an example by ourselves to be the example, nucleus to be there, by our core devotees, and we try to bring them at that level, but where they don't quite connect, then that's where we see how to engage them. Then we get the whole pyramid of the arrangement of congregational supporters, helpers, etc., as well as devotees of different qualities. Point number four. We are, and these are all keys, basic keys. All the other things we're going to give you on the sheet, they'll go into one or several of these categories. We are not a religion. We are not a religion competing with other religions. Sometimes our devotees get intimidated because people say we're bringing in another religion, or how we're going to contend with the Christians, the Muslims, the this or that. We are not a religion. Some of you may remember the quote, I don't have it exactly, but Prabhupada explained that we are a cultural movement to re-spiritualize society. And we are not only a relative cultural movement, but we are the actual culture of humanity. Culture and involves in terms of lifestyle, aspirations. We are the original culture of existence. And so what we are involved in is not in terms of compete, but we're trying to connect people with the universal understanding, knowledge, and principles about life itself. Humankind's relationship to God, to Krishna, to the cosmos. We understand that, and we'll understand what I'll bring up later when I talk about interfaith and new age at this time. Just as when we are preaching, we approach the idea of new age teaching, we want to approach people in the spirit of not so much for other religions even. Just think at that point. We want to approach them not in the spirit of our religion, their religion. We have the inner teaching to all religious systems. As someone goes deeper into Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, the most inner teaching of that system is Krishna consciousness. We have the inner teaching in the most accessible way. And therefore, we can go into churches, we can go into mosques, we can go into other places if they allow us, and we should be able to help them to understand by following the teachings of Krishna consciousness, they can become more aware, more involved in the deeper aspects of their own system, which deals with the basic principles of Krishna consciousness. Because no system has the degree of knowledge about the personality of Godhead. Every bona fide system emphasizes love God with all your heart, emphasizes that we are not of this world. And no system to the degree of ours explains we are not of this world, but who are we? And what connections or what the residence is our residence? Nor the system describes the degree about the personal God. And practically every system in its mystical tradition talks about a personal aspect of God. So that means, to some degree, it may mean some homework for some of us to find out more about some other systems to see how we can be able to connect people with the inner teachings of those particular systems. We can elaborate on some of those things. As we go over these keys, you can write some notes. We can try to address that. This presentation could take a week. We're going to do it in half an hour or so. So forgive us for moving through some things pretty fast. But I mentioned about technique. Just as, for instance, in Bombay, Radhanath Maharaj's system, one of the simple but powerful things is before each program, he plays the harmonium and does very powerful bhajan. Now that bhajan is like an archie bell ringing, it's like a call for people coming, assembling, and getting the consciousness of absorbing themselves in his meditation on Prabhupada and his love for them and their love for him reciprocally. Now, someone like myself, if I was having a program and had a harmonium and started playing, instead of people coming, everyone would leave. So he has a harmonium, and then the class, and then kirtan, and all of that takes literally several hours. So certain techniques may be more applicable for you by what you have to offer, and certain things someone else. But the general idea of the keys are very essential, and that's why we're trying to give those first. I hit number four? Schedule or practice? Okay. Now, so remember, Prabhupada mentions that our movement, we are engaged in Sanatana Dharma. So it's not really religion at all. It's beyond that. Religions are vehicles to ride in, to come to the platform of recognizing that there's a God. In other words, Bhagavad Gita starts on the platform of Arjuna speaking to Krishna. We're not involved in the system of just ethics and morals, or for people to try to come to a point of accepting that there is a God here. Now that there's understanding there's a God here, what is the relationship, what are the activities involved in that understanding? And that is Krishna consciousness. It is not that if Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, if these great personalities, Ramachandra, Madhavacharya, and Bhakacharya, if they all happened to come to Dallas today, that there would be fights or arguments. No. They would be in so much loving accord, even though they came at a different time, taught different things, because even sometimes a teacher may be of a certain commission, of a certain endowment, but his commission may be to give a certain lesson. Someone may have the qualities of, in fact, those qualities of a college professor who has been given a service to teach elementary school. Jesus spoke very clearly, I have much to tell you, but you're not ready to hear it. So it's very clear that there was more that he was connected with. And he said that to his own disciples. So there's so much more to many, many systems, even from what the prophet himself gave. The prophet Muhammad, his basic teachings were ethical, moral. His teachings were how to be fair in trade, how to do many ethical things. But in his greatest experience, his own personal experience, his ascension, he had a personal face-to-face connection with God. And therefore, it shows that there was something beyond the general teachings and the impersonal teachings of the Quran. He met Allah face to face. He ascended from the lower planet to the medium to the higher, and then Angel Gabriel could not go any farther with him when he got to the highest heavenly kingdom. And then he went above that, which is called Sidratil, where he met Allah face to face. So every system, as we go deeper and deeper in it, we'll find there is some aspect of a personal God here. It says that Sarah had a relationship in the Bible with God like a mother to a child. There are many, many references. But anyway, that's on, we get to interfaith connection. But the point is that Krishna consciousness gives the highest knowledge about the understanding of the God here, and that is non-sectarian. If we're thinking that it's sectarian, we're going to approach things that way, we're going to feel intimidated, and we won't let the message come through, you see, sufficiently. Number five. Preachers, we should not rely only on our own devotees, our own finances. Now, what does that mean? It means that if we recognize that everybody is a devotee, we surely don't rely only on the immediate souls around us. First, there's so much more to do. Is it CIA or FBI? maybe it's a fundamentalist. Christians did not rely on our own devotees, just as the Christians did not rely on our own facilities, our own intelligence. If we're seriously preaching, then we see, as Sanatana Goswami was saying, that things are coming through me, things are happening, that things should be happening, the miracles should be happening. Because Krishna wants these things to happen. He wants us back more than we want to come back. So many souls are there. Lord Chaitanya is in anxiety, trying to reclaim the souls. And so if some few are making themselves available, will not the power come through if we sufficiently allow ourselves to be available? Therefore, we want to remember that our Father owns everything. Just as if you go somewhere and, you know, your Father, he owns the shopping mall, you walk around very proud because you realize that it's your Father who's in charge of that mall, and you have certain privileges, certain situations, you are secure. So Krishna owns, controls everything. And therefore, we do not have to be so shy about trying to bring back certain parts and parcels of Krishna, different energies, back to Krishna as they are owned by Krishna anyway. So therefore, we must be ready to use all kinds of things. Now, we'll give you some short practical examples. We'll move the two other points of key, then we'll pass out a handout to you. I'll give you some of our own examples. For instance, we'll take Africa first. We do what's called interesting type of interfaith. There are different ways to approach interfaith activities. We do it in terms of espionage. Can you take me closer? Because I'm video also. Let me give a most basic example. We have one temple